games in simulation. Um evidente, para nós é um grande prazer e uma grande honra termos este convidado entre nós. Mais do que isso, desde logo, sem qualquer hesitação, ter aceito o nosso convite, muito nos distinguiu. Stephen Dunst trabalha no National Research Council do Canadá, no qual é investigador, o centro de investigador sénior. Trabalha desde 2001 nesta instituição e está ligado particularmente ao grupo de aprendizagem de tecnologias cooperativas. Mais propriamente, grupo de aprendizagens com tecnologia e aprendizagens cooperativas, do Instituto de Informação e Tecnologia. Tem como áreas de especialização a atividade do trabalho de investigação na aprendizagem online, os novos mídias, os mídias emergentes e os campos gerais da pedagogia e da filosofia. Bom, se todos já estiverem a este lado, eu daria a palavra ao nosso convidado Stephen Dunst.
Okay, to you. Sim, já está tudo. It's okay to you.
Hello, everyone. See how this microphone is working. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here today. And thank you all for coming. I appreciate the time that you've taken out of your busy schedules to come and listen to me, even though I'm speaking in English. Maybe one day I'll learn Portuguese, but today is not that day, so I apologize. Like many of you, I was yesterday downtown to watch the students and their parade, which is something that we don't see so much in Canada, events like this. And I was watching the students, and an event like that makes us question sometimes whether we are doing the right thing. Not the right thing in teaching them, but the right thing in providing learning online, because what we saw yesterday, right, was the heart and the soul of a learning that takes place in person. And, you know, the history of our field, the history of online learning, it goes back to the days of learning objects and the days of adaptive courseware and Plato and these systems that were designed and intended to replace the university, the college, the school, to replace the teacher. And we would have software that was adaptive, that would accommodate itself to the learner and make all the decisions and present one piece of learning after another piece of learning after another piece of learning. And when you look at the students in the street like that, you can see very evidently how that is the wrong thing to do. How it is the wrong thing to simply try to replace all of that with a computer program. And you know, we sometimes think as teachers and instructors that we are the education, that we are the learning. But again, when you look at the students in the street like that, you understand that we are at best stewards of that education, but the education is in itself in the students, and the students are their own education. And that is the context in which we work today. Now, the learning materials that people are talking about and people will present to you as modern technology, the very leading edge of learning online, are things like games, they are things like simulations, There are things like multimedia, learning objects, adaptive courseware, and the rest. And I'll tell you right off the bat that I think many of these things are terrific. They're wonderful things. That is a game up there. It's called Civilization. I have spent more hours playing that game than, well, pretty much anything. I love these things. And it speaks to their educational force that they grab you and they hold you for minutes, hours, days at a time. And so the educational potential of such systems is tremendous. These games, these simulations, do not simply present material to you. They create environments. They create places in which you, as a player, rather than a learner, immerse yourself. You become a part of that game. You start thinking in relation to the game or the simulation. And they stimulate you. They make you think of problems. They make you think of solutions. They make you extend your boundaries, stretch your capacities. And in this way, they are excellent devices for learning and teaching. No question. I love them. But they cannot be everything. Just like we, the teachers, cannot be everything. Just like adaptive courseware cannot be everything. If you think about it, a game, a simulation, a learning object, an online course, all of these things need to be planned ahead of time. They need to be designed in advance, which means that we have to know in some way, some shape, some form, the details of how the content, how the interaction will be presented. And this creates a challenge that we cannot respond to simply in software. What we have to do, if we are to use these at all, is to situate these, situate games, situate simulations, situate learning objects in a wider context. And in the same way, we situate our real-life learning events, our events like this conference here, our events like our classes, our events like the things that we do in a traditional university. And so the picture that we need to have, even of these advanced technologies, is one where they are surrounded by a much wider frame of reference. And that wider frame of reference, for lack of better terminology at this point, I characterize as conversation and interaction. The real life that each of ourselves, each of our students inhabits. Why is this? Well, in major part, it is because we cannot plan ahead. When we educate, we are educating not simply about the things that we know about now. We are not simply taking content that we already know and transferring it. Rather, what we are attempting to do is to create or produce a capacity for dealing with that which is unknown. Because we know from experience that the future will be different from the past. And as well, when we educate, we are educating not a whole bunch of identical automatons. We are educating individuals. And individuals who are today different from people who were in the past. We just heard in the panel session the discussion of the students who are looking for their wireless access and they want to get on to MSN Messenger or something like that. Our education was not characterized like that. When I was in university, I was looking for the bar, not for the wireless. Things change. So what we are trying to do is to create this environment to distribute the decision making about what to present, about what simulations to use, what games to use. We are trying to create a mechanism of related software, objects, games, simulations, people, places, events, in order to distribute, or as the other panelists said, to democratize the decision making in learning. And it is that that I characterize as learning networks. But it's more than just distributing, it's more than just placing the decisions in the hands of the students who will be influenced by them. It is to set up a mechanism, a wider mechanism, an infrastructure consisting of conversation and interaction that itself learns, that itself reshapes itself, reshapes the connections between individuals, the connections between objects, and learns and adapts to the new capacities of the students and the new realities in the world. Because although we as educators perhaps by our nature sometimes tend to think that we have all of the educational answers, it is a fact that we do not always know what it is that we want to teach. I think of myself, for example, coming here to a city that I've never been to, meeting a large number of people that I've never met before, not knowing what sort of thing I was going to experience, not expecting by any means to see a parade of students in the streets. How could I know what I was going to want to talk about until I'm actually here and in this place? And I think that that is a reality faced by teachers, and that is a reality faced by anybody who has a responsibility to pass information on one to the next person, to the next person. So we need a mechanism, a system, that allows us to just pull from it whatever we need at the moment. The connections are there. The connections are shaped by the interactions and the conversation, and the connections give us the capacity to pull resources, simulations, games, whatever, into place at the right place and at the right time. And so, for example, for this slideshow, I pull this picture, I pull that audio clip, I pull this idea, that concept, I bring them together in the moment that it is needed. Part of the background for this approach is the sort of learning that people who are working in very uncertain environments have to do. And a classic example of that sort of environment is the military environment, where what the situation they are dealing with did not exist a year ago, 5 years ago. And it is something that cannot be planned for. And so the question comes up, where is the real knowledge in this sort of situation? And I know I use a military example here, it's because that's what I had at hand. A very similar sort of setup exists in IBM. IBM has also set up a system very much the same way. And again, in the field of computing, particularly for IBM, which used to be a company that makes computers and now is a company that deals entirely in consulting, the entire nature of the business has changed within a few years. And so the knowledge that exists in such a system is not in the minds of the teachers, because the minds of the teachers only comprehends what has happened in the past. The knowledge is actually in the minds of the members, the participants, the students, because they are the people who are out there, who are encountering directly whatever reality it is that they have to learn about. And what happens is, if you have these people connected together in a network, like Company Command, or like the IBM network, or any of the other networks that we work on, we can think of students not simply as the receivers of knowledge, but also as, and it's sort of hard to find the appropriate metaphor here, but also as the eyes and the ears of the learning system. The need for learning comes from the experiences of the students themselves. The need for information comes from the challenges that they are faced. And these needs are expressed, are discovered and realized through the conversations that they have with each other. You see the picture there? The students themselves are like the sense organs. And the students themselves are connected to each other and to us. And it is through their perceptions that the network shapes itself and learns and creates the capacity to provide the appropriate learning resources for that particular situation that they are faced with. Some of the tools that we have used in the past to support this sort of interaction, this sort of communication, are things like content management systems. And many of you will be familiar with a service such as Drupal, which is an open source content management system. Drupal is a wonderful tool. I've used Drupal. I like Drupal. It doesn't do everything I would like it to do, but for what it was very effective. And what it was a system that promoted conversation and interaction among its users. It supports individual accounts, pages, threaded discussions, and many more things, the sort of things that we have been promoting in environments such as the learning management system and learning content management system in education. Very similar sort of functionality. Where this is moving, however, is beyond the simple content management system, beyond the simple learning management system, into something that I, a number of years ago, called e-learning 2.0. And the idea here is we move our conversation and discussion outside the single Drupal environment, the single learning management system, and from one application to another application to another application. And the intent here of this sort of system is to begin to create that learning network that I've been talking about, to begin to create a mechanism to connect learners with each other, to connect learners with resources and learners with instructors. And so what we are seeing is a gradual shift, and this has been, over the last 5 years, very, very gradual. A gradual shift to decentralization, a gradual shift from inside the institution, inside the learning management system, to a network outside of these institutional systems. And a gradual shift from linking a student only to a game, a simulation, a resource, or whatever, to linking students with each other and linking students with a wide variety of resources. And the next development in that progression was a piece of software called ELG. And some of you may know of this software as well. And what ELG is intended to do, and what it does very well, is to connect students not only with resources, but to connect students with each other as well, to begin to create what are now called social networks. What ELG does that a system like Drupal did not do was to enable content to be imported and to enable content to be exported. Now, those of you who are familiar with Drupal will say, well, yeah, it can do that now. This is true, but to a lesser and limited functionality. And what ELG is trying to do is make that functionality built into the system itself. But even that is not enough. And so, consequently, what I need to do now is to talk about some of the work that I and some of my colleagues have done to take this basic idea and to expand upon it. Excuse me. And so I move now to the current work that we are doing. What we are working in the internet now is, as the title says there, a complex internet environment. Back 10 years ago, in 1999, Hegel and Armstrong, the Harvard economists, wrote a book called Net Gain. And what they tried to describe was the way community would form on the internet, the sort of community that we've tried to work toward in creating learning resources. And the model that they had was the model that we developed in the learning management system, where everybody would come to the destination community. I sometimes think of it as the destination resort model of community, the destination resort model of learning. Everybody comes to us. And so Hegel and Armstrong, they talk about travel communities, they talk about pet communities, they talk about shopping communities. It's all economics, right? But the internet did not work out that way, and the internet is not today composed of these communities. Similarly, 10 years ago, we were told that web services would redefine the way we worked with information online, where all of our interactions would be choreographed by intelligent software. The classic model of web services, again, was the tour, the travel agent, who would use web services to coordinate the car and the hotel and the airfare and all of that. But it turned out that those requirements were relatively limited. And we did not get, really, the complex web services environment either. So what we did not get was the community plus the web services. What we did not get was this model of adaptive software that everybody was thinking that we were going to get 10 years ago. The internet, as it turned out, became much, much messier, but consequently better. Instead of having a single place that they go and have their own community in one little resort online, people have multiple places that they go and multiple places where they leave their stuff. People have home pages all over the place. They have a blogging account. They have a Twitter account where they Twitter. They have a Flickr account or a Picasa account where they put their pictures. YouTube or Blip, where they post their videos. They just put content anywhere and everywhere. They start up accounts, they use them for a little bit, they drop them. Community on the internet is almost disposable. And that is the environment in which George Siemens and I, last year, last September, started a course called Connectivism and Connective Knowledge. And the model that we tried to use was not this model of the learning management system, not this model of adaptive software that would do everything for you, not even the model of adaptive, super smart instructors who could accommodate every need, but rather a model that creates a network that learns and adapts itself to the needs of the participants in the course. We opened the course. We allowed people to sign on for credit at the University of Manitoba, but we also opened the course to free and open admission to whoever was interested, and 2,200 students worldwide signed up for the course. And right off the bat, you can see with a number like that, there is no sense to be made of the idea that we could manage the learning in this course. The course immediately grew beyond our capacity to manage it. But that is why we did not have a plan where we would be managing the course. The idea here was, in this course, the participants would essentially create a network of connections among each other. And they would use whatever technology they felt was most appropriate. Their Flickr, their YouTube, whatever. This here, this diagram here, for example, lists the connections to the individual personal blogs that students created. 170 of the students who enrolled in the course decided to set up their own blog. And so this page here lists that 170 blogs and connects them together. And what we did in the course is we gathered the content every day from those blogs. Now, not everybody posted every day, but lots of people posted. We gathered the content and then we distributed it to people. We used a piece of software called Grasshopper, which I created in order to create this network. And the idea of Grasshopper is that it is a piece of software that allows me to bring in content from any of these sites that I talked about, from YouTube, from Flickr, from blog websites, from discussion lists and the rest, using a content format called RSS or Atom. And then not only to bring the content together, but then also to send it on to other people. And so I would bring the blog content together, I would assemble it, and then I would send it out as a newsletter, or I would send it out as an RSS feed. And for those of you who subscribe to my own newsletter called OL Daily, it's this software that is making that newsletter possible. It's this software that helps me bring information in from around the world, assemble it, work with it, and distribute it. And the idea of this software is that it creates one node in the network. It creates one individual place in the network that will be connected to other places in the network. Grasshopper is a prototype. It's, you know, not commercial software by any means. But the idea here is it's a prototype personal learning environment, and I'll talk a bit more about that. It's a prototype of software that is not a destination, but rather something that each individual owns and manages. So instead of one piece of software applying to many people, each person has their own individual piece of software, and they connect with each other. It turns out that Grasshopper was not only useful as a learning platform, as I had been using it, but it's also very useful as a teaching platform. But that makes sense when you consider that the role of the instructor is not to manage everything, but simply to be one node in this connected network of conversation and interaction. A node that connects to students and learns from students and then provides information, resources, links, etc., as demonstrated by the needs of the network. Grasshopper allowed me to aggregate and organize content from students who are using any of a number of different platforms. And, whoops, sorry, I bumped ahead a bit. And it allowed me to distribute these contents, as I said, with my newsletter and my RSS feed. Now, another aspect of this Connectivism course that I wanted to talk about focuses on evaluation. And again, the idea of evaluating 2,200 people is incomprehensible. And needless to say, we had no intention of attempting that. But it does raise the question of how that would be managed in such an environment. Well, we had some people who had signed up for the course and they completed assignments and then they were marked by George because I convinced him to. But another thing that happened during the course is we had one student from another country who asked us, can we take the course, but instead of taking the course, instead of being marked by you, Can I take the course from you, but be marked by my home institution? And it sets up a picture, if you will, of a distributed sort of evaluation where everybody takes the same course, but they are evaluated by different institutions in different places according to different criteria. And that allows for people of different skill levels and different abilities to participate in the same course, which is something that we really wanted to happen, because people learn from other people of different skill levels, and also people who are at higher skill levels are able to learn even more effectively by helping people who are at lower skill levels. So we wanted to see this mix, but how do you evaluate it? Well, you distribute the evaluation. The other thing, too, is in a course like this, again, we're not managing the course. And again, we don't know at the start of the course what we are going to teach, because we don't know what it is that the students need to learn. They haven't told us yet. And so the evaluation of the students cannot be based on what they remember, because we don't even know what it was we wanted them to remember. We don't even know if we want them to remember anything. So the evaluation has to be of their participation and interaction and conversation in the course. It's an evaluation of their competence in this domain, of how easily they manage a discussion and an interaction in this field, in this area, in this endeavor. And if you need an analogy to think of this, think of a discussion list or a mailing list that you have been a part of. And there are other people in this discussion list, and some of them you like and some of them you don't. And ask yourself, well, what is it about the people in this discussion list that I like? What is it about them that I like? And it's that when somebody has a question, they have an answer. And they have a good answer. And they don't just answer, but when someone has a question, they begin a process of negotiation with that person. I want to know how to raise bees. Well, why do you want to know how to raise bees? Well, I need honey. Well, why don't you try another way? You see, there's an interaction that happens, a negotiation, not just a transfer of content. And when you see somebody interacting and negotiating and facilitating in this domain, that tells you, as a member of that list, that this person has skills and capacities and abilities in this domain, and you like them because they are able to help you. And it's that kind of evaluation that I am talking about. It's a distributed evaluation in that it's not just conducted by the one person, it's not just conducted in the one place, and it's not just based on the one event. So that takes us now to the future. More students. Very happy. They're finistas. Finalistas? Okay. I assume that means graduates. Yeah. But it had to be because they were so happy. And there was something about cats and for those of you who don't know me, I am a cat person. I have 4 cats at home. So seeing a parade dedicated, apparently, to cats, it was perfect. Some of the future developments in the actual infrastructure of the system that I've been describing, this is one thing I've been working on. It's called serialized feeds. Another person who's been working on this is Tony Hurst at the Open University in Britain. And the idea here is to create a mechanism to feed into a conversation network like this a pre-programmed set of content. So And it's the name serialized comes from the old idea of serialized novels, where a person would write an entire novel, but they would publish the novel as separate chapters in a magazine. So this week is chapter one, next week is chapter two, the week after is chapter three. Well, what serialized feeds are intended to do is the same sort of thing. You feed one chapter this week, one chapter next week, but you feed it into a network rather than into a magazine. So basically, it's a way of setting up the timing of the distribution of the learning material. And it's just as an aside, there's been very little work that I could see done regarding the timing of the distribution of learning resources into, well, into online learning generally, but into an informal learning network in particular. I could find virtually no work done on that. So I think there's still more work to be done on this. So the idea here is you predefine your content, you predefine your times, and then you release that into your email or your RSS stream. There's I'm actually reading the Diary of George Orwell, and it's from 1938, and so every day as he wrote it in 1938, it shows up in my RSS reader in 2009. So it's very interesting, and I've been following this for the last year, and what I've learned is that George Orwell has a fascination with hens and eggs. I have no idea. So sometimes you don't always learn interesting things, but after the serialized feed, the major step forward is the personal learning environment. And this actually represents a major research initiative that has been taking place now for a number of years. It's still in its earliest phases. Work is being done in Britain by people like Scott Wilson at JISC CETUS, also people like Graham Atwell and others here in Europe. And right now, we are just starting up a major project at the National Research Council in Canada to create a personal learning environment. And this diagram describes the personal learning environment. Again, it's the same model that we saw with the Grasshopper software. At the very center, where it says future VLE, that's a person. That's you. You are at that center. And then you use your software at that center, and you connect with many other things, all of your different accounts, all of your different home pages. So you connect with the list of things. You connect with your photographs on Flickr. You connect with your blog on LiveJournal. And one among many of the things that you connect with is the learning that comes from your college or your school or your university. So for you as an instructor, you are one of many sources of knowledge and information that your student receives. It's kind of a different perspective to take on life as an instructor. The major phases or the major activities that a personal learning environment will undertake is to aggregate content, to remix it to allow a person to bring in content from different places and put them together, to repurpose it, to add their own content, their own interpretation, to reshape it, to localize it, and then to feed it forward, to distribute it to other people. And these are the general functionalities of the personal learning environment. And then the idea here is that these personal learning environments connect to each other. So you have one, you have one, you have one, you have one, and they're all connected together. And they're connected together using those mechanisms of RSS, of email newsletters, and the rest. I just want to step back briefly as I begin to wrap up here to think about the sort of model of learning that we will have now as compared to the model of learning we had, say, 10 years ago. And the model of learning that we have now, we have these things that are connected to each other. So we have these personal learning environments, and they are kind of like us. A personal learning environment is like a person. And then we have these contents that we send one to each other. So I send content to you. I send an image to you. I send a video to you. I send a funny graphic to you. I send a piece of text to you. These contents now, picture in your mind, these contents are whizzing back and forth through the network. So we have the network of people, we have the contents that move back and forth. Now these contents begin to interact with each other. The message that I send to you interacts with the photo that somebody else sent to you. And so we have a picture of learning that is very different from the picture that we had before. Let me explain. If we go back to the world of adaptive software, of learning management systems, of programmed learning, the model of learning that we had was essentially linear. Things connected to each other. First you see one thing, then you see the next thing, then you see the next thing, then you see the next thing. And the way the adaptation would work is it would change the sequence. And that's why in IMS, the Instructional Management System protocols, we have things like simple sequencing. And if we get more complex, we have learning design. And what learning design is basically is introducing roles and branching into that. So, but it's still this, and then this, and then this, and then this. And that's how we organize learning, right? It's this, and then this. And that's how we do it in our classes. This, and then this, and then this. But with this new model, a different picture emerges. One where there is no sequence. One where instead of chapters in a book, we have objects in an environment. Remember that picture that I started off where you have the simulation and the game and the class inside this environment of conversation and interaction? Well, from a software perspective, this is like having objects in an environment. It's like those old games that we used to play called MUDs, which was an object-oriented environment, and the whole MUD was an object, and then you, the user, you were an object too. You were an object inside that MUD, and then the book that you would read, that was another object, and then you would connect with that object. And the thing is, nothing is specifically made for anything else. Everything interacts simply by virtue of their capacities. It's like the horse and the palm tree. The horse and the palm tree are together in the jungle. The jungle is the environment. The jungle was not made for the horse. The jungle was not made for the palm tree. The palm tree was not made for the horse. And in fact, we never even think of palm trees and horses in the same place. But the horse can look at the palm tree and see a palm tree. And the horse can actually interact with the palm tree. If the horse is itchy, the horse can rub up against the palm tree and relieve its itch. And the palm tree can react to the horse. Not very quickly, because palm trees are very slow. But the picture here now, this is our learning environment. You might be the horse. The palm tree might be your learning material. You weren't meant for each other. But if you're in the same environment and you have the right sort of interaction, then you interact. Another day it might be something different. It might be a different tree. It might be a different animal. The objects always change. The interaction between the objects is not predetermined. But the learning happens not by eating the palm tree or anything like that, but by existing in this environment and over time adapting oneself and being able to conduct oneself fruitfully, effectively in such an environment. And the original idea, as I said, is from the old MUD logs. the software libraries that were used to create these online games. And these online games were not predetermined. They were not structured. They were not, you do this, you do this, you do this. They were just places where you would go and you would hang out. And if you felt like doing something, you would do something. If you wanted to go slay some monsters, you go slay some monsters. If you wanted to talk to somebody, you talk to somebody. If you wanted to solve a quest, you solved a quest. And what these MUDs did is they grew and adapted and shaped themselves according to the needs and the interests of the people who inhabited them. And indeed, the original MUDs were actually built by their players. The people who played the MUD would eventually become so good at playing the MUD they could begin to program bits of the MUD for themselves. And so this leads us to a different model of learning design, a different model for the creation and distribution of learning resources. From a technical point of view, it represents the difference between list processing and rule-based processing. It represents the difference between working through the steps of a computer program and working in an environment where different rules express the capacities of different objects within that environment. Now, I know that's messy and complicated, and I cannot possibly do it justice in 30 seconds or so. But what is important to understand is that this is a fundamental change that is happening in learning, in learning software and in these systems generally, where we are moving away from the idea of learning as described by a flowchart, away from the idea of learning as described by a sequence of events, and toward the idea of learning as interacting with objects and with people in an environment and adapting that way. The new theory of learning, the new theory of learning objects, is, if you will, is now where our interactions, these objects that we use, I want to say this carefully, because it's a hard concept, but it's such a crucial concept. We are in our environment. Each of us is an object in our environment. We create a network by communicating with each other. So we are all connected to each other. And so we communicate with each other. We express our needs. We express what we have learned and what we need to learn through the conversation and interaction. So we are like the horse, we are like the palm tree, and we interact. But what do we interact with? It used to be the case, it was formerly the case, that we would interact with words. We would interact with sentences, with paragraphs, with books, where one word follows the other according to a grammar, according to a syntax, according to a set of rules, right? That's how we used to interact. But what is happening now in this digital environment is we interact not with words, but with objects. These objects become the new vocabulary. What are these objects? These objects can be any of the things that we create. Our photographs, our videos, our animations, our simulations. Any of these multimedia resources become like the vocabulary that we use. So now picture in your mind, we are all in an environment. We are all communicating with each other, but we are sending pictures, we are sending videos, we are sending animations, and that's what we are getting. And we communicate with each other that way. And there's no linear rules now, are there? There's no order in which the pictures must be sent. There's no order in which the animations must be sent. And also, the order does not help you understand them either. The understanding has to be now a product of us organizing them, mixing them, merging them, reframing them, working with them, understanding them, sending them along. That is the communications environment that our children, the people we saw on the street, are communicating with today. That is the language that we, as instructors, need to learn. And that is the shape of the software that is being developed today in order to support informal learning. And that is my talk. And I thank you very much for your kind attention and your patience.
Are you? fotografia a lá uma amiga que Costa me deu e mandou-me eu dar-lhe beijinhos. A senhora vai ficar muito atrapalhada agora. Ela está a escrever uma dedicatória para ela.
Estás na cola? Na cola?
Na fila? You have two more people.
Three more people.
Yeah.
Just let me turn off my audio here, so this will take 1 second.